Although I'm the first professional musician, first musician in the family to pursue this as a profession, everyone in my family is musical and musically inclined. So I think I definitely was very lucky to grow up in a musical environment where there's just a lot of music and an incredible recording, just treasure trove of recordings that my parents had collected over the years. So I kind of grew up with that. And really, it's kind of a sequence of very unlikely events that led to my own musical career. So, you know, growing up here in Kalamazoo, Michigan, in the early 90s, how did I get into Indian classical music and the mridangam in particular? Well, it turns out that my dad has had a long, lifelong interest in learning this instrument as well. And he decided that he wanted to start learning in the early 90s. He's actually a professor here at Western in the Geosciences Department. And has been here since the 90s, early 90s. And it turns out that at the time, there was a grad student here at Western who came from India, and he had quite a bit of musical training. He had learned the mridangam and Indian music while he was in India. And through a variety of means, my dad got an instrument from India, and he started learning, but his training kind of fizzled out after a few months. He just didn't have the time to practice. And but I was very lucky then to have a teacher in town and an instrument in my house. And I think one day I just asked my parents, I said, can I start learning this? And in a sense, the rest is history. But yeah, so my first teacher, his name is Damodaran Srinivasan. He was a grad student here in paper science, I believe. He's a grad student in paper science. And I learned from him for a couple of months, one-on-one. Then he graduated and got a job in the Boston area. So then, you know, we're faced with this dilemma that there are no, you know, Indian percussion teachers within a 300-mile radius of Kalamazoo. The closest teachers were in Detroit and Chicago. And even those teachers were basically part-time musicians. They weren't full-time musicians. So my teacher, Mr. Srinivasan, had this interesting idea of continuing lessons over the speakerphone.
Oh, this is before
Skype. This is before Skype. That actually happened to work out very well. So I did this for, I think, over a year. And it was a purely audio medium, so there's nothing to see. It was just, you know, hearing him. Luckily, by that point, I'd already learned the basic techniques on the instrument. And along with this art form is this really wonderful system of vocal percussion. So we actually we learn along with the drumming an entire drum language, a way of basically speaking and singing all of the rhythms that we play. So I'd already learned that at that point. So he would say, you know, recite and play repertoire for me, and I could translate that to my instrument and play it back for him.
You can learn a piece for drum without even touching the drum?
You can, yeah. And in fact, usually the way that the music is transmitted is taught is first literally orally, that a teacher will say the repertoire to the student. The student says it back, and only once you can say it do you actually play it on your instrument.
I really want to ask your mother, Sujatha, what it was like to have your young son working on this instrument over speakerphone and fitting into the evening chores and dinner and all of the and life like that.
It was generally during the weekends. That's when the teacher was free. And I used to be ready with my recorder, cassette recorder, and sit with him, write down the lessons when the teacher would orally talk over the phone. And I would write it down and record it. And then it used to be such a great fun to be sitting and then practicing it together. That's when I started actually using the cymbals a lot, because that goes together to keep the timing, and that's when cymbals are used. And that's where I started learning the intricacies of the rhythm more than, I was more used to the melodic side of it, but then I started becoming more and more familiar with the intricacies of rhythm.
Well, now's a good time to ask you, Sujatha, about when you began your musical studies. You have an extensive background in classical singing from India.
I started learning classical singing maybe at the age of 7 or 8. That was in Calcutta, India. And I learned from renowned teachers, and their names are like Mangalam Mani and Padma Narasimhan. And after moving to this country, I had opportunities to learn from visiting artists like Anandi Krishnan. And whenever we used to go back to India, I used to also learn from teachers there like Guruvayur Rajam. These are very renowned teachers from all over India.
You know, I take my flute to workshops. And it's usually a group of us, and the teacher teaches one or two tunes, and you learn by ear. Is that similar to what studying voice would be like, or studying Indian classical music?
Yeah, it is basically orally taught it, but then we are also have notations, and especially with melody, we always have the words, because there are compositions are in so many different languages. So we are asked to and encouraged to learn different languages so that our pronunciations are correct. You start from the very beginning. It's like learning a language, starting like ABCD. So that's how we start with like Saregama. And then the teacher goes, generally starts in a group lessons. And then the more you go progress in your thing and in your studies, the teacher walks you through, and then she or he starts giving you special interest and more time, spend more time with the teacher. And then that's how you develop it. And listen to a lot of music and attend a lot of concerts. That's the way we observe a lot orally.
And that's what you saw Rohan doing as a boy with the mridangam and your first teacher.
Exactly, and it's a very intimate relationship that's developed between teacher and student. In the Indian context, we call the teacher a guru. Guru is means a lot more than a teacher. It's kind of a lifelong spiritual, intellectual guide. And usually the lessons are one-on-one. You do have large kind of institutionalized music education in India, but if you really are really serious and really want to advance with a teacher, it's mostly one-on-one. So you really have a lot of time that you spend with your teacher. And in that sense, it's actually very curious, very interesting to think about learning an ancient tradition like this over the phone or nowadays online over Skype.
My guests are percussionist Rohan Krishnamurthy and singer Sujatha Krishnamurthy. Rohan, I wonder if we might move toward a demonstration of all the techniques and tradition we've been talking about. You have your drum here in the studio, and we're all set to go if you want to share a piece with us.
Sure. So we'll actually be performing two pieces. I'll start off with a percussion solo, a solo on the mridangam here. Just a little bit about this instrument. So this really is one of the most ancient, complex, and versatile drums in the entire world. It has a history of over 2,000 years. So it's a very, very ancient tradition. It's a double-sided hand drum that's played with the fingers and the palms. What makes it so unique in the world of percussion at large is that it's a pitched drum. When you use a system of hand drumming techniques on this instrument, you can create very definite pitches on the instrument, such as well as non-tonal and semitonal sounds. And then this is all on the so-called tonal side of the instrument. Then you have the bass head, where you can produce various tones, such as... And then you can, of course, bring the tonal head and the bass head together to create combined sounds. It's a really, really fascinating tradition. It uses what's called a split finger technique. So usually, you know, if you give an untrained person a drum, their first instinct is probably to just slap it, you know, use all four or five fingers and just slap it and create a sound. But what we do here is we split our fingers into very specific formations to create very specific sounds. So using this technique, we can create over a dozen unique tones on this instrument. So in a sense, every finger is like an independent drumstick. So we're working with 10 drumsticks here.
Okay, well, take me back to what your teacher would have started you on.
We start with really the musical alphabets, which are the very basic strokes on the instrument. And each of these strokes has a name. So I mentioned that we have this whole system of vocal percussion, which is called konakol. So the way that we create this language is by giving each stroke a name. And the name is onomatopoetic. Basically, the syllable is supposed to sound like the stroke. Every student of the mridangam begins with these four strokes, which is called Tha. The. Dom. Num. And then there are other strokes that are covered. Cha. Din. Theme. And then we have combined strokes. Thom. Kitta, 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 kitta. The idea is that we should be able to say whatever we play and play whatever we say. So no matter how fast and how complex the rhythms are, we should be able to say it. So if we take a rhythm like... we can actually say that literally.
That's incredible to hear. You reproduce that drum solo verbally. So you've just basically told us one of the secrets to learning Indian classical music on the drum.
It's a process. It's a very gradual process of learning learning the musical alphabets. We basically take each of these strokes, which are like letters, and we start putting them together to form short words and then longer words. We put these words together to form sentences, the sentences together to form paragraphs, paragraphs together to form musical compositions. So it's a very kind of cumulative process.
Why did rhythm move past what we work with here in the West? Why did it move past 4-4, 3-4, something very basic?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really complex question. You're right. In Indian music, there's a lot of fours, but there's an equal number of threes and fives and sevens and nines, and to the extent that we don't even think about it, or cross rhythms, syncopations. These are so common that we don't even really have terms for them. Absolutely. Indian rhythm is really one of the most complex, forms of rhythm in the entire world. I guess part of the reason might be the notation. So in Western music, notation has been around for several centuries. And in Indian music, interestingly, there was a system of notation even 2,000 years ago, but it never really caught on in practice. It was more of a theoretical kind of tool. Nowadays, in the last century or so, there have been various forms of notation, primarily for the melody, but there have been some systems for the rhythm too. I should mention that all of my training, private training, was entirely oral and aural. There was no notation. Both of my teachers, my initial teacher, Damodaran Srinivasan, and my advanced teacher, Guruvaya Dorai from India, taught entirely orally. If there was any notation, it was thanks to my mom, because she would sit with me in each and every lesson, and she would actually write down all of these syllables. And I think she came up with her own system of notating the syllables and the rests and all that stuff. And I actually just went through the notebook recently in my room back home, and there are literally hundreds of pages of the stuff that she's been writing down. So she's being very modest. She knows this repertoire as well as I do.
I suspect she is being quite modest, but we're getting closer and closer to the piece you'd like to play for us.
Sure. So this is a percussion solo on the mridangam, and it's in a five-beat meter, and it's actually an odd meter. So the five beats is split up into 2 plus 3. Or really 2 plus 1 plus 2. And it's clapped out. We typically clap out this time cycle, which is called Gunda Chapu. 1, 2, 1, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So this basic underlying meter is actually performed on the cymbals. So my mom's going to be performing that on the cymbals, and that provides a basic framework for the piece. And also, midway through the piece, there's a section that's uses the vocal percussion. So we'll get to hear that as well.
Thank you. Takit din, 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 tak Thank you.
My ears and eyes are widened with amazement. I've never heard or seen anything quite like that. It's extraordinary. My guests are Rohan and Sujatha Krishnamurthy, the first family of Carnatic music here in Kalamazoo. I have some questions for you about what we just heard.
Uh-oh.
First of all, thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Extraordinary.
My pleasure.
How much of what we just heard was an improvisation, and how much was something that had been established before that you learned?
Yeah, that's a really fantastic question. It's hard to know, right? Unless you know the repertoire, it's hard to tell whether it's improvised or it's composed. In Indian music, and especially in the southern Indian style of Indian music, which is called Carnatic music, there's really an equal emphasis on composition and improvisation. So you have kind of 50% of the repertoire that's composed, and then 50% that's improvised. So in a sense, you really have a 50-50 split here. And I'll let the listeners try to guess which parts were composed and which were improvised. Indian music is all about structured improvisation. So it's not free improvisation in the sense that you can do whatever you want. There are certain rules, there's a certain grammar to the music, and but there's a lot of freedom as long as you understand what the basic boundaries are.
Well, the other area I wanted to go into maybe was expression. You know, in Western music, we think about pieces being joyful or peaceful, or this one being sad. Or what kind of emotional or expression component can you bring into these pieces?
Yeah, that's also a very, very important question. Indian music draws from a concept called the Navarasa. The Navarasa literally means nine moods or nine flavors. Nava means nine in Sanskrit, and rasa is mood or emotion. So there are basically nine different emotions that are typically drawn upon. And it's, of course, a very subjective or interpretive thing. But we can bring out a lot of different shades and emotions, especially on this instrument here, the mridangam, because we have that tonal element. So it turns out, I've actually done acoustics research on this instrument, and it turns out that the acoustical properties of this drum are actually quite similar to the violin, to a stringed instrument. So that tonal sound that we get is very much sort of has a melodic character. So we get both the kind of melodic character as well as the driving rhythmic, you know, character in this instrument all in one.
Tell me more about the mood or the mode you were employing in that piece.
There were many. It wasn't one specific mood or mode. It's the piece is in a sense sectional, so there is kind of a slower beginning, and it kind of goes in a very broad sense from slow to fast, or from sparse to dense. And there's also an extended section in triplets. So this is a very traditional kind of concept where one section of the piece is in a totally different subdivision as the rest of the piece, and we develop that for, you know, anywhere from 2 minutes to 10 minutes. So each of these has a different kind of mood. There's a kind of a sense of tranquility at the beginning, and certainly excitement towards the end, and everything in the middle is really up to the listener.
Here's a question I often like to ask musicians. It's about the concert experience. What kind of conditions for you make a great concert experience and allow you to give a performance that you think is inspired?
First and foremost, a good instrument. Our instrument needs to cooperate, and especially since this is a pitched instrument, the, you know, instrument needs to be perfectly tuned, and especially you would have heard the drone that was going on, and that's a very common backdrop to this music. The drone actually was originally performed on an instrument called a tambura. The tambura is a long lute-like instrument, and it's plucked, and you would have a tambura artist, someone actually plucking that for the entire concert. What you actually heard was the iTambura. This is an app, a recently released app, that pretty much does the same thing. It uses samples of that, but it provides the same kind of backdrop, melodic backdrop to the music. So the instrument has to be perfectly tuned with the melodic reference point. Your hands and fingers need to be in perfect shape to play everything that your mind, you know, is going for. A lot of times we, you know, surprise ourselves in a performance. We don't know exactly what we're going to play, especially in the improvisational sections.
I was just going to say, how much thinking are you actually doing?
Yeah, there's a lot, and then there's none. It really depends on the section. So, there's a kind of common joke in the Indian music world. People always ask after, you know, a performance, you know, how long have you rehearsed for this performance? You know, the Alaska Trio, how long have you rehearsed for this performance? The performance may have gone on for 2 hours or 5 hours, could be a long performance. And the response always is, you know, either, you know, nothing, we haven't rehearsed at all, or we've been rehearsing all our lives. And I think that's very true in this music, because performances are actually typically unrehearsed. I didn't rehearse this piece before coming into the studio. So what you heard was the first and probably the last time you'll ever hear that, unless you hear it again on WMUK. But it's something that we do put together in the spur of the moment.
You were an American kid from Kalamazoo going to study with percussion masters in India. How vital was this musical language to making that transition and you know, going to a strange place and fitting in?
Yeah, well, you know, I think we can all agree that music is all about culture and tradition. And this form of music in particular is an extremely powerful way of connecting and reconnecting with our Indian cultural heritage. So certainly I was first attracted to this music by just the sound itself. But as I learned more about it and had the opportunity to perform and study in India and all over the world, it really made me realize that this is a way of a musical language, a way of speaking to other people and sharing this really incredible tradition with other people. And since it also reflects my own cultural heritage and my own ethnic heritage, it's a way of kind of reconnecting to my Indian past.
Well, I understand that there, here in Kalamazoo, there is a cultural center, the Indo-American Cultural Center and Temple. And Sujatha, you've been involved with the organization there for a long time.
Yes, I'm very proud to be not only a teacher and also I'm a coordinator for this. It's a part of like a Sunday school. I not only teach Indian music, but I also teach like Sanskrit slokas and recitations for children for ages from 3 to 13. It's been an awesome experience for me to teach these bhajans and kirtans were the ones which I learned as a child myself, listening to what was going on at home, at my own home. That's how I learned. My parents were very good singers. So that's how I learned all this, by just hearing them and then used to sing. And that's what I'm continuing to do that. And I want to make sure these children, when they grow up, they continue to listen and keep singing, so that it's a continuity of music.
I think not only do you teach and pass on tradition, but you and your family have, over the years, sponsored a number of great musicians to appear in Kalamazoo and present unique concerts.
We have been always promoting this Carnatic music for many, many years, and especially after Rohan started performing. I would say my husband has been one of the publicists and also promoter for music, not only in Kalamazoo, but all over the place. And because of Rohan, we got to know a lot of connections with the Indian artists who are like top-notchers. So we could bring them, and we always hosted them at our house and arranged concerts in town, in and around town. And we also chauffeured them all around the place, fed them. And so it's been a very good journey for us. So it's not only for Rohan, it's actually been a journey for the entire family.
What would you tell someone new to this tradition, this kind of music, who might want to attend a live concert in Kalamazoo, about what to expect, what kind of mindset he or she might arrive with to best enjoy a live concert of Indian classical music?
I think given the diversity of the repertoire, you have to really go into a concert with an open mind. And this is true of even professionals, because you never really know what's going to be, you know, what's going to take place in a concert. There are short pieces. There are long pieces. There are short pieces that are as short as 2 minutes. There are long pieces that are as long as an hour. So you have, you know, this incredible repertoire that's just so diverse. I always find it fun to actually sort of tap out the basic beat that the piece is in. This is something that a lot of us do instinctively, but I think when you just even tap your foot or, you know, your hand to the rhythm, you realize how much is going on rhythmically. Mm-hmm. You realize how much is not on the beat. and I think that's, you know, a really fun experience. Knowledgeable audience members actually will clap out these meters with the musicians. So this is actually part of the tradition. It's an interactive experience. So you can actually clap out the time signatures and really feel, you know, how the music keeps sort of creating this tension and release with the meter.
I've been to a concert of this music and when you were performing at Kay College, and I remember sitting in and enjoying it. However, all of a sudden the audience laughed in the middle of a piece, and I didn't know why that happened. But it was only a very small section of the audience, but they all thought that something was quite funny.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think once you learn a bit more about the conventions and the music, and you maybe have certain expectations, when those expectations are defied, then it could be a moment of laughter. But I don't actually remember what the joke was. Maybe the joke was on me.
Sujatha, you are going to sing a song for us here
yes.
today. And I would like to hear, is this a sacred song or a secular song? And what part of the tradition does this come from?
This is a very religious song. This composition was composed by 18th century composer named Sri Muthuswami Dikshitar. He traveled widely all over India by foot, and he had a lot of opportunities to listen to people from other parts of India, like northern, eastern, western, and he adapted many of these melodies, and then he composed compositions in those melodies. So the one I'm going to be rendering today is one of such compositions, which is predominantly a Hindustani rag, but then it was adapted, and then he composed in a masterpiece in that particular rag. And this particular piece is in praise of goddess Shakti, or the universal power. So it is in praise of Akhilandeshwari. Akhilandeshwari is the one who rules and governs the entire universe. So this is in the language Sanskrit, and I'm going to be singing that for you.
Akhilandeshwari Rakshamam Sri Akhilandeshwari Rakshamam Sri Akhilandeshwari Rakshamam Sri Mm-hmm.
ಜುಜಾವತೆ ರಾಗನುತೆ ಜೋಬಾರೆ ಸಂಬಾರುತೆ
That was beautiful. Sujatha, maybe I shouldn't begin with this silly compliment, but, you know, you're a mother of two children past college, you know, and your voice sounds so young to me. It is very sweet and youthful, and you have a wonderful range. It was really beautiful to listen to.
Thank you very much.
I get to watch you singing as well and keeping time with your right hand, and I can see you teaching young kids, you know, with these techniques, showing them the rhythm and showing them the songs, and imagining you passing on these wonderful, wonderful songs to younger kids. That is something you love to do.
Yes, all my life I have loved it, and that will be with me forever.
Again, tell me the name of the song and the name of the composer.
Name of the song is Akhilandeshwari. It's in the melodic rag or melodic scale or rag called Jijavanti or Dvijavanti. In the north it is called Jayjavanti, and in the southern part it is called Dvijavanti. And it is set to an 8-beat cycle or called Adithar.
Well, Sujatha and Rohan Krishnamurthy, our session is almost done here at WMUK in the Takeda studio. I'd like to know from you, Rohan, what is coming up in the near future for you? What are some of your latest projects and passions? And can we hear news of you at your website, rohanrhythm.com?
Sure, yeah. So definitely my website's the best place to check out all my latest events and my schedule and everything. As of the fall, I've been based in San Francisco, and I've been doing a lot of different things there. I think I've been from coast to coast probably 5 times since since the fall. So I've been doing a lot of performing and presenting a lot of workshops and masterclasses all over the country. I also run a full percussion studio, both in person and online. So I have over 30 students now. I teach all over the country on a regular basis. And and I'm actually also in the process of starting a company to sell my newly patented drum design. So this is a new way of tuning drums. It's basically more user-friendly and durable, and it combines the old technology of through-and-through strapping with a more modern nut-and-bolt system of fastening. So this is something that can be applied to any drum that needs to be fine-tuned. So I'm in the process of manufacturing that design. I've been working as a consultant with some music tech companies in the Bay and New York City as well. So, yeah, keeping busy.
Well, thank you for coming to WMUK. This has been a very special session.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
My guests this hour were Rohan Krishnamurthy and Sujatha Krishnamurthy. I hope you had as much fun as I did learning about this fascinating tradition and the fact that individuals in our community are so well-versed in the music and can share it with us. Once again, Rohan Krishnamurthy's website is rohanrhythm.com, and the website for the Indo-American Cultural Center and Temple is kalamazootemple.org. The music and interview were recorded at WMUK in the Takeda studio by engineer Martin Clem. This is WMUK's Let's Hear It, Music of the Moment in West Michigan. I'm Kara LaRance. I encourage you to tune in every weeknight, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at 8 o'clock to see who you know and what they're playing on WMUK Kalamazoo, Music NPR, Local Arts and News from Western Michigan University.